today we're exploring the world of artificial intelligence and its impact on photography. Recently, there's been a lot of talk about generative AI and its potential to revolutionise the way images are created and used. Joining us today, we have lead researcher and RMIT senior lecturer, Dr. TJ Thompson, to talk about AI and the world of photography. Good morning, TJ.
Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Not doing too bad. Lovely weather over here in Borloo. Well, how are organisations avoiding legal issues with copyright, and how do organisations ensure they're using generative AI ethically and responsibly?
Yeah, I think the safest kind of knee-jerk reaction is to say we're going to ban AI entirely and not use it at all.
That's not going to happen, though, is it?
Yeah, it's a really big competitive disadvantage because lots of folks are using AI and people want to use, you know, technology to make their work better and faster and easier. So it's probably not going to happen, the complete ban. You can try to really kind of put on your legal hat and look at terms of service and that kind of thing to see in a bit of detail how the different AI models are being trained. So, for example, your models like Midjourney or Stable Diffusion or DALL-E, you might have heard of those kind of models. Those have been trained on largely copyrighted content from online, whereas newer players like Getty has a generative AI tool that you can use to make images, and it's claimed that it's only being used, only training its data on copyright-free or proprietary data. So you can kind of look in terms of service and see which ones have a little bit less legal risk when you're using these generators.
So what are some of the potential drawbacks or limitations of using generative AI in photography?
I think one of the biggest ones is just that they're very generic. So if you think about, you know, making an image of a street sign or a police car, that kind of thing, like it can show you a police car or a street sign, but it's not going to be, you know, a particular police officer or a particular street in your local community or a particular politician, that kind of thing. It's really good at representing really well photographed, well documented things like politicians, you know, the prime minister or Trump or that kind of thing, but it really can't get you concrete, realistic generations of ordinary folks like you or me. And so I think that's really where it falls down is that kind of that genericness, that lack of concrete imagery. We want to have our news be really richly illustrated with people like you and me, our local communities, our local businesses, that kind of thing. And if you're turning to AI to make images for you, they're going to be quite generic, much like stock photography, and not as engaging.
Is it normally pretty easy to spot the issues with AI and photography? I'm sort of thinking of a recent photograph released by Neil Princess.
Yeah, it's becoming, I think, increasingly more difficult with AI editing and AI generations. In the last 12 months or so, a lot of generators would struggle with things like rendering human hands accurately. It has, you know, an odd number of fingers, you know, 12, 14 fingers, that kind of thing. The tools are getting better and better day by day. So I think some of those little anomalies and glitches are going to become less and less frequent, which means it's harder and harder to detect as ordinary folks when these tools are being used. I think that really kind of underscores the need for policy, because if you don't have a policy in place, how are we going to trust you? How are we going to trust our organizations if they're not being transparent about how they're using these tools, in which ways, for what purposes?
How far away are we from AI being able to, effectively adjust the public record, adjust news?
Yeah, I think part of it is based on the models you're using and how much you're paying to use them. If you do have a paid model that you're using, generally the results are a bit better than kind of the freebie version that everyone can use. So it does depend a bit on which tool you're using and how much you're spending to use that premium version of the tool. But definitely, I think in the coming, you know, months, we're seeing a lot more sophisticated, realistic imagery coming out that a lot of folks, even experts, can't necessarily differentiate from things that are being made by cameras. So it is a bit concerning.
So, TJ, are there any other industries outside of photography where generative AI is making an impact?
Yes, absolutely. I think kind of just name any industry you can think of, and it probably has an application for Gen AI in that space.
Give us a few ideas there.
Yeah, like it can be used for weather forecasting models. It can be used for telehealth consultations. So instead of having to kind of see a GP and book time with them, and it's oftentimes a very expensive endeavor, maybe you can have a medical chatbot that you can kind of work through initial low-grade medical issues with and get some advice from a medical chatbot instead of, for example, a human GP. That's kind of an outlier example, but lots of different domains, lots of disciplines beyond just journalism and news media.
And I guess those bots, if we're projecting everything forward, they're going to actually get better at the tasks as well.
Yeah. It depends on the training data. So if you are training your bots or your AI tools on really high-quality training data, then you're going to get better outputs and better answers and better advice. But I think the thing that a lot of tools are struggling with is that we don't really have really high-quality, robust training data to help the tools learn. So oftentimes they're coming from really non-representative sources, from particular parts of the population, from oftentimes just from North America and Europe and that kind of thing, so it's not kind of representative of the global rest of the world. So this can kind of manifest in biases in terms of how the tools learn and think and then give you advice and work.
If you've just tuned in, this is On The Record, and I'm Jeff, and I'm talking to Dr. TJ Thompson, lead researcher and RMIT senior lecturer, about generative AI. Now, TJ, back to the human factor. Editors okay with AI creating non-realistic illustrations?
That's kind of the use case that we saw where they're most comfortable. So we journalists, news outlets, editors don't want to obviously deceive or mislead folks, so they want to be very cautious about how they use these technologies, and they think that one of the ways they can use these technologies more responsibly and ethically is by making these non-photorealistic illustrations. So for example, an example of this is like Bitcoin or Credit Suisse or some of the stories about banking, that kind of thing. Oftentimes these stories are really dry and hard to visually illustrate, so editors think, maybe I can, you know, turn to AI to make a illustration of a Bitcoin symbol, that kind of thing. Because some topics like Bitcoin or AI itself are really hard to illustrate. And so if you can't photograph them easily, AI might be able to help you create a representation that is suitable for publication.
Not really too different to the shortcuts a student might use.
Yes, definitely. I think that's true.
So how might AI freeing up photographers for more creative work affect the industry?
Yeah, hopefully it is kind of getting rid of some of those really dull, boring, not as creative tasks. So for example, you might be asked to make an image of a soda can on a plain white background. That, you know, might take 20 minutes in a studio, and it's not the most creative task, kind of just getting the lights in place and getting the soda can in place on the wall and photographing it. That's not the most kind of creative, riveting task you can be tasked with. And so if we can use AI for some of that more kind of dull and less creative tasks, maybe we can then free up our photographers to go out and do more evocative storytelling in communities, again, trying to focus on concrete people and circumstances that really matter more so than kind of the stock photography things.
TJ, I find an amazing amount of people that tend to slide into hand-wringing when it comes to talking about AI and that it's fraught with dangers in the future. What's your take on that?
I think some of that concern is justified, I think in part because of how complex the tools are. And when you can't really understand something well, it does make you suspicious of it. So I think some of that concern is justified because a lot of these AI models and algorithms are very complex. They're not very transparent about how they make their decisions. And so I think there is some justifiable concern there. But I think, as I mentioned before, people are using these tools. More than half of all Australians are reporting using them in their work tasks every day. And so when you have that big enough of a population using these tools, we have to work to understand them better, to be more literate, and to use them more kind of ethically and responsibly, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of akin to saying, you know, I don't like computers, but they're part of everyday life. You can't really say I don't like AI when it is such a part of the technology that's woven into everyday living. Is that right, TJ?
Definitely. And again, from health and medicine to arts and culture to news and publishing, really any kind of industry is seeing disruptions through AI and its technology.
Well, Dr. TJ Thompson, thank you so much for joining us this morning on The Record and setting the record straight for a few of us on AI.
Thank you, Jess. Good to chat with you.
That was Dr. TJ Thompson, who's the lead researcher and RMIT senior lecturer, chatting about generative AI and its impact on photography and life in general. What do you think?